I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester. His name is John Anilio, and you're listening to the Functional Nerds podcast. This is going to be episode number 231. And John, if I'm not mistaken, this year we have, or this episode, we have Gail Carriger's date to last year's Hugo.
I think you are correct in that. Yes, there's some fantastic pictures of them, but that is Patrick Hester. He's an author, a blogger, and a Hugo award-winning podcaster.
And I mentioned that because I had a little something to do with that, just a little,
to do with that. We'll get into that in a moment. And my name is John Anilio, and I am a musician and a composer and a podcaster. You can check our website at functionalnerds.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at John Anilio. And Gail Carriger's date to the Hugos is actually Adam Christopher. He's a writer, and he's got tons of stuff out. He's quite prolific these days. He came on our radar quite a few years ago when The Empire State was put out, and he's got the Burning Dark, which was out from Tor, and the follow-up to that, which is called The Machine Awakes, which Patrick and I both have copies of this book, but Adam does not yet.
I know, and that's a trip.
So that is out. He's got lots of other stuff going on, which we will get into, and it's Adam Christopher. Thanks for joining us today, Adam.
Hey, how's it going?
Oh, he's just so mellow. He's always so mellow.
I've had a busy day. I'm just trying to
relaxing. And I got to tell you, John, Adam is actually one of the sweetest and nicest guys you could ever meet in person. I've had the opportunity to hang out with him a couple times at World Cons. Wow. You're just a nice guy. I like you.
Yeah,
thanks. You're not so bad.
Now, Patrick, is the Hugos that you're alluding to, is that the one when Gail accepted your Hugo award?
Yes.
That's what I thought. Cool.
And so Adam has a new book out. Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I'm probably the only person who knows what Gail said when your name was read out and she had to go up and do the speech.
Didn't she say, oh, fuck, or something?
So I can't repeat it. It's not fit for public consumption.
Well, Gail came here to Denver, and I know we're going off on a side story here, but she came here for Prudence, which is her new book, and did a signing at the Tattered Cover and invited me to come out and say hello. And so I did. And after her huge long line of fans had worked through and got her to sign everything, I picked up a copy of Prudence and I walked up to her and I said, "Will you sign one for me?" And she's like, "Absolutely. Do you want it personalized?" I said, "Yeah, but you probably won't do what I think would be very funny for you to do." And she gave me a look. She's like, "What do you want it to say?" And I said, "I wanted to say, thanks for letting me hold your rocket in London." And she just gave me this look, and she's given me this look as she's writing that in the book, and she just closed it. She says, "Oh, Patrick."
I couldn't help myself.
I just thought it would be hilarious.
It's not wrong. It's not incorrect. Yeah.
She's been very vocal about that. That is actually the way to go to the Hugos, is not actually have anything of your own up there, because then you're dealing with all of the worry and the tension and, you know, the fretting and all this kind of stuff. She's like, if it's somebody else, you just get to go and have fun and do all the parties. Just accept on somebody else's behalf.
Yeah. It's a good plan.
Yeah. All right. Well, you know,
so the let's, new book. Yeah, let's go.
Yeah. Well, so why don't you, you know, so the new book that is coming out through Tor, The Machine Awakes, it's the second book in the series, which started with The Burning Dark. So maybe you could tell our listeners a little something about that world and what they can expect.
So The Machine Awakes, the thing about these three novels, there's three in total, is they're not really direct sequels from each other. They're kind of all set in the same world. Events in one book have implications for the next book, but they're quite a standalone space opera science fiction type things. So basically, it's 1,000 years in the future, and humanity and all the planets that humans have colonized are basically being reorganized into one gigantic kind of military complex called the Fleet. because they're facing this this endless war with a machine race called the spiders. Well, humans call them spiders, but they're like a gestalt intelligence, so they don't really have an identity or a culture or anything. They're just this big, swarming, horrible machine thing. So, and the wars are kind of a stalemate, and basically humans are trying to do everything they can to get the upper hand. So in the Burning Dark, you see one of the plans that the fleet had to try and like get the upper hand on the spiders. And considering it's like a science fiction horror novel, it didn't really, obviously the fleet's plan was not successful, shall I say. The second book is quite different in a way. The Burning Dark was set in deep space, kind of isolated edges of human expansion. In The Machine Awakes, we're on Earth in the capital city, where, you know, the kind of the military council that's ruling the fleet, because their previous plan has gone so badly, there's kind of this political infighting and people hate each other, and one guy, an admiral, actually takes over from the previous admiral. And then the previous admiral's assassinated. And then the guy that takes over is assassinated.
Wow.
And it's like
a Sam Sykes novel.
There's death on every page. But then the fleet's own kind of internal investigation arm, which is the Fleet Bureau of Investigation, or FBI, if you like. Basically, they call in their best agent, who's on an undercover mission, and he kind of uncovers this big plot and conspiracy, which is sort of political, corporate, military shenanigans, and eventually you find out what's actually behind it, and the spiders, who are this machine kind of race, they're very much in it. They're much more in this book than the first book. They kind of hinted at in the first book, but people kind of said, oh, that'd be really cool if we could see kind of what they are and what they're capable of.
So, and are these spiders the descendants of Peter Parker and Gwen Stacy?
No. They're big... they're big moon-sized machines that tear planets to pieces with their claws.
Oh, so they're the descendants of Ben Reilly and Mary Jane Watson Parker.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's a kind of... Sorry.
Oh, and I was going to say, why don't you finish your thought there? Because mine will kind of lead us in a little bit of a different direction.
Well, it's like, so the first book is, The Burning Dark is science fiction horror, kind of. So the second one is more traditional space opera. So they're traveling between planets, and there's kind of this political thing going on, and there's more kind of action and science fictional concepts. Mm-hmm. Whereas the first book had kind of supernatural elements and things. So it's definitely a change of pace and a change of tone, which is quite deliberate. And then for the third book, which is called The Dead Stars, which comes out in April next year, 2016, that's back to bleak, terrifying space horror.
But essentially, you can pick up any one of the three and read it without having to read the other two.
Yeah, exactly. Awesome. Obviously, if you read all three, you get more out of it, but you can definitely pick them up and then you can go back.
And if you read all three, Adam gets more out of it, but...
Yeah, exactly. You should definitely read all three books. Yeah. In fact, you should buy at least three copies of each book.
Yeah.
To really study it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Have one where you can highlight stuff. Have one where you can dog your pages.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
And then have one that you can write notes in the margins.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was going to say that I just saw online the other day that they revealed the cover for book three, which looks awesome.
That's got a spider on the front of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Basically a big spaceship that's going to kill everybody. So yeah.
Let me ask you this, because I think you know, Patrick and I, we see a lot of books. We are very fortunate to get
see a lot of books.
Yeah, and we're fortunate to get lots of books sent to us. And
oh my God, we get a lot of books.
Yeah, I love it. I'm not complaining. I love it, especially because I've been reading so much more lately than I have before. And the covers seem to be, you know, I can imagine as an author. And I guess it depends on if you have any input into your cover. Some authors I've spoken to have a little bit of input. It seems like most don't really have any or not much. So how does it feel for you sort of awaiting a cover? Because I imagine that can be a euphoric moment or a very disappointing moment. So how does it feel for you sort of waiting to see a cover?
I think cover art is one of the things that's a constant surprise and joy of being a published writer, because basically you get this thing every year or 6 months or however often you have books out that is like, surprise, here's some artwork and some design that goes with your book that you have never seen before and it's completely new, and that's just really exciting. I've been kind of lucky because every single one of my books except for the elementary one has been done by Will Stahl, who's this, I think he's based in Seattle. He's a graphic designer and artist, and he's done all of my books. all of them.
Wow.
Yeah. Even the variant covers for some of the Angry Robot ones he did. But the thing with him is that he's so amazing. He will send like 10 covers, and they're all amazing. And you just have to kind of go, okay, well, this cover is like really incredible. But this cover is like incredible and a little bit more. And you just, it's so difficult to try and to pick the right one.
What I'd like to know, John, is I would like to know if any author has ever showed up for the very, like a book launch party and the very first book signing kind of thing. And that's the first time they've seen their cover. That's what I would be interested to know. Because I want to believe that that actually has happened to somebody.
The author?
Like the author. Like the author shows up to sign books having not seen it yet. Because I would be willing to bet that's happened at least to somebody one time. Because it's like you talked about, they don't always get input. And sometimes it's a surprise.
Yeah.
Well, Adam, maybe that was you say your thought, because I bet I'm going to say something similar to you. It's better coming from you.
I have an input into the covers, and like, Tor asked for notes on the story, especially because like the Dead Stars, I'm still writing it, so there's nothing to read yet. Mm-hmm. So I have to kind of compile notes for Will and Irene Gallo, who's the art director at Tor, so that they can make a cover. Mm-hmm. And then obviously, especially when there's no book to read yet, they then have to send me all the options and say, which do you feel actually matches the book. With The Burning Dark, because that book had been written quite a while ago, I had much less of a say in it.
Yeah.
Because they'd read it and they knew what the book was about and what the tone was, and they could pick the cover quite easily. So Dead Stars went through like 10 covers. The Machine Awakes was 6 or 7 or 8. And then even when you pick the final one, there's always tweaks to do and adjustments to make. I've been so lucky. Well, the fact that Will has done all my covers is just unbelievable. Because he did my covers for Angry Robot. And when it came to do The Burning Dark, I know Irene was like, trying to figure out what to do, because it's kind of space opera horror, what can you do? And I just said to her, like, because I saw that Will Stahl had done a cover for Tor. He'd done Ian Tregellis, Northern Night. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's immediately recognizable as being Will. And I just said to her, it's like, well, he did my covers, and imagine what his idea of space opera would be, because he's not a traditional artist. He's more like a graphic designer. Mm-hmm. It's kind of that kind of style. And she's like, oh, yeah, that's quite interesting.
Cool. Yeah, Irene is really neat. I like her.
Yeah, she's brilliant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think a book cover, I'm convinced it has a very big impact on on book sales. I think it just really, you know, for people just to pick up the book, I think it makes, I know for me, it makes a big difference. And I even get sent these books. It's like what I choose to read out of the books that are in my house already.
Yeah.
A lot of times I'll lean towards the ones that have covers that I think are cool, you know?
Well, that's absolutely right. Like, you know, you never judge a book by its cover, but you definitely, a cover sells a book.
Yeah.
You know, when I look at those big posts, like I think ESF Signal does them, you know, like here's 200 books coming out.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, what am I going to read? So I scroll through it and I pick out, you know, five or six based on the cover.
And and you know what? I don't know how DiNardo can manage to put those together as often as he does. And he'll also do like 337 books, ebooks, all under $2.99. And you're sitting there going, you know, I've had to edit those or at least look at them in the past and just sit there going, oh my God, all the coding and work that goes into this and all the research, dude, you're insane. But that just kind of shows DiNardo's passion for the whole community and for science fiction and fantasy. So side note there, sorry.
Well, I bet like those are amongst the most viewed posts because
probably
because I always check them out. I always save them to Instapaper for later, and I kind of do the same thing Adam does. I sort of scroll through, and a lot of times whatever covers catch my eyes. A lot of times that's how I go about booking guests for the show. I'll be like, ooh, that one looks good. Let me find out about this author because that looks cool, and let me find out about. And anytime I like will tweet links to the SF Signal posts with those or put them on Facebook. Those are often my most liked, retweeted posts. Like people like to sort of scroll through and see that. So it's a lot of work, but I suspect they get a lot of traffic from. But anyway, cool. Well, let's get on to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
And Adam, do you have a pick ready?
I do. And I'm kind of a little bit biased, but I'm going to do it anyway. So I'm picking a comic, which is called Black Hood, which is by Dwayne Szczesinski, who's the writer, and Michael Gaydos, who's the artist. It's out from Dark Circle Comics, which is the kind of superhero imprint of Archie Comics.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a kind of a retake on an existing character from a long time ago, the Black Hood. In this version, he's basically a cop in Philadelphia who he gets injured and is sort of sent on sick leave, and he gets addicted to painkillers, and he develops this kind of twisted desire to do to criminals what he can't do as a policeman while high on you know whatever industrial strength painkiller you can think of. And he wears a black hood. He gets scarred in this accident, so he wears a black hood because he can't look at himself. And yeah, he takes on the crime of the city while high. Well, he's still a policeman. During the day, he's a cop. And at night, he's a black hood. And it is screwed up. It is so screwed up. It's the first Archie comic to drop the F-bomb. and this is true, like in the whole history. And yeah, it's the artwork is like gritty and dark and just really noir. And the story is kind of like it's a tragedy. It's action. It's noir. It's crime. It's kind of Punisher-like in a way. That kind of darkness to it. You know, and Dwayne is such a great writer. I mean, he's a novelist. He's a crime novelist. And he's written for Marvel and DC. And yeah, it's fantastic.
Well, isn't Archie doing some different stuff now?
Yeah, so this is Dark Circle is a new take on this. Because yeah, they've got this library of superhero characters that go back to the 1940s. And the reason why I'm saying I'm biased is because myself and Chuck Wendig are doing one of the characters called The Shield, first issue of which is out in June. So there's three books. There's Black Hood, The Shield, and The Fox is like wave one. I think The Fox comes out in April. Black Hood is up to issue two. Shield starts in June. So, yeah, I mean, Archie have been really pushing the boundaries. They've got things like Afterlife with Archie, which is Archie is an adult zombie horror comic.
Yep.
And they've got The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, which is Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
Mm-hmm.
but it's, again, it's an adult horror comic set in the 1960s. Yeah, and people love it. And they are great. Like, Afterlife with Archie is truly amazing. And these things exist outside the regular Archie universe. Mm-hmm. So Archie and Jughead and Betty and Veronica and all that, they still exist as people remember them, you know. But yeah, it's a really exciting time for them. And Black Hood is just amazing.
Very cool.
I definitely recommend it.
Cool. My pick is going to be Heir to the Jedi by Kevin Hearn. It is one of the new official canon Star Wars novels. And as I think I may have mentioned...
Shit!
Sorry. Patrick doesn't agree with me on this, but... I am all in on the new Star Wars stuff. Maybe I should have learned from my mistakes, but I sort of did this before the third prequel came out. I'm like, I'm buying it. I'm going to go. And I read like tons of those novels, like the Clone Wars novels and stuff. But, I actually like that they're doing this sort of limited canon thing. And I've read all of them so far. So I read John Jackson Miller's A New Dawn, and I read, Tarkin by James Luceno, and this is the most recent one, Heir to the Jedi by Kevin Hearn, and Paul S. Kemp has one coming out very soon too, which is supposed to be a Vader Palpatine based novel, which I'm looking forward to very much. But this is a story about Luke, and it is from Luke's point of view. So it's a first person point of view from Luke's point of view, which is very interesting, and it takes place right after the first Star Wars movie, A New Hope. So it's supposed to be a few months after the destruction of the first Death Star, and it's basically Luke on a secret mission. And not a ton happens that like will affect sort of the Star Wars universe, because you know Luke's gonna make it. He's gonna make it to Empire Strikes Back. Like that's the one sort of problem with the Star Wars novels that feature the main characters is like, well, you know, they're going to make it out of it. So I think that must be very difficult for an author to write and add tension in when we know how the main characters are going to end up. But that being said, there's lots of cool little sort of hints at him developing his force abilities pre Empire Strikes Back, which I liked. And there's a nice sense of humor to this book, which you don't get in Star Wars novels very often. And so I thought Kevin did a really good job with that. And look, if you're a Star Wars fan, like, I don't know, I'm eating this stuff up. So, you know, just join me in my love of Star Wars and read this one. And one of the reasons I wanted to pick this one this week is because, as Adam mentioned, he's doing the comic with Chuck. I'm also super excited that Chuck is writing a Star Wars novel as well. And his is going to take place right after Return of the Jedi. So
Aftermath.
Aftermath is the name of the book. That's not going to be out for a while yet, but that made me so happy because, you know, Chuck being a friend of the show for so long and Chuck being from like our generation and sort of writing that. And I love Chuck as an author. Like, I've read a lot of Chuck's books at this point too. So I was just so excited when he announced that. So I'm really looking forward to that one too. So anyway, this one, again, Heir to the Jedi, Kevin Hearn. Patrick, what is your pick?
So longtime listeners of the show are aware of this, and I think John's aware of this, that I hold grudges.
I'm aware.
I still call it the channel formerly known as Sci-Fi, which annoys John sometimes. He's like, he said before, Patrick, you just need to let it go.
I think we need to let it go.
Yeah, the whole Star Wars canon thing just ridiculously pisses me off. And I've argued with James S.A. Corey on the show about it, and I've argued with them at Mile High Con about it. I love Chuck to death. I have recently met Kevin Hearn, and he is a wonderfully affable person and a great person to hang out with and know. And I read The Iron Druid, and he's a fantastic writer. So, you know, it's not like I'm begrudging these guys and female authors. Hopefully sometime soon they'll announce like a female author is going to be writing one of these Star Wars books. I don't begrudge them anything, and I wish them all the success in the world. It just pisses me off. You know, it's so insulting to me as a fan of Star Wars for them to do what they've done. And then to also freaking release, you know, the digital copies for $20 a pop. You know, come on. It was bad enough when it was the Lucas merchandising machine, but now you've added the Disney merchandising machine, and it's like, stand back and just wait, because it's, you know, people bitch about Amazon. Just wait. You know, Star Wars in the hands of Disney is going to be ridiculously explosive. I don't know. So anyway, get that out of my system. I'm calming down. The blood pressure level is going back. My pick this week is the hashtag Wednesday Doodle or Wednesday Doodles, which I share currently with Jeff Patterson. I kind of started it. But it's Wednesday Doodle, and it's something where I doodle on these little, post-it notes, right? And I just do my little doodles, and I'm sitting there at work, and I started hashtagging them and releasing them on Wednesdays, and it's not real art as far as I'm concerned. Patterson brings real art to the mix. He does some really, really cool stuff, and I've always invited other people to also doodle. I'm pretty sure they doodle. I think everybody doodles. Some people just sit there and they, as they're in a meeting at the day job or something, they're just, you know, doodling on a piece of paper. And what I do is I take a picture of it with my iPhone and I push it out on Twitter under the hashtag Wednesday Doodle. And I encourage other people to do it too. I just think that everybody likes to draw and doodle a little bit, and it's fun. And Jeff and I have been doing this together now for, my gosh, 2-3 years, something like that.
Yeah, I feel like you've been there for a while.
So every Wednesday, you know, we push out doodles ourselves, and we kind of do dueling doodles sometimes. And he'll do a really nice, artistic, sci-fi, you know, expansive piece that's all really detailed and stuff. And then sometimes I will take whatever he's drawn and do it in my really crappy doodle style. And we'll have dueling doodles that way. So I love it. I think it's great. I want other people to enjoy it as well. If they're not aware of it, all you have to do is go to Twitter and type in pound, you know, the hashtag sign pound Wednesday Doodle, and you'll see everything we've ever done there. And if you want to draw something and add it to the mix, by all means do. And we'll both retweet it and like it and favorite it. And it's just fun.
Cool. Adam, you know, as I mentioned at the top of the show, you know, you have a lot going on. You have a lot of different books and projects. One of the things that you've done is the elementary novels. Explain how that came about for you.
Yeah, that was kind of cool because Elementary is just about my favorite TV show. And when I signed with Titan Books, the Titan Books publish Elementary, and they do loads of other tie-in novels for TV and games and movies and stuff.
Can you introduce me to Lucy Liu?
No.
Yeah.
I can try. It won't work. I kind of, you know, I knew that Titan do all that kind of stuff, and I went down, like, I had lunch with my editor when I first signed, because they publish the stuff that Tor publishes in North America, Titan publish everywhere else in the world. So when I went down and kind of just met everybody and said hi and had lunch, and they were just talking about stuff, and Elementary came up, and I was like, oh, okay, you're doing Elementary novels. Well, that's kind of interesting. And as soon as I got home, I emailed my agent and said, you've got to get me an Elementary novel. You absolutely must get me one. And kind of it's one of those things where, like, you know, project timelines slip by and deadlines change and things roll on, and I didn't hear anything for ages. And then, yeah, suddenly it was like maybe 6 months later or 9 months later, I got an email and was like, did you still want to do an Elementary novel? Because they need someone to do an Elementary novel. I was like, yeah, sure. And so I did the first, yeah, so I did one. And being a fan of Elementary, like, tie-in fiction, it doesn't need to be fan fiction. You know, you can learn a property. Because, you know, writers as professionals, it's a job. You get a project, you write the project, you do the best that you can. I think if you're a fan, it's kind of easier because obviously you know it inside out already and back to front. And I had to kind of not do it quickly, but I had to kind of jump in because they needed someone to kind of, you know, get to work. And, yeah, it was the most fun ever. It's just like you get these amazing characters that you watch on TV and you get to write them.
Did you have any contact with the people from the show?
Sort of. Because it's a CBS property, and obviously you can imagine CBS is about the most gigantic corporate machine you can imagine. There's lots of layers of intermediary people that you have to get through, and there's approvals and approvals. Like, the novel is 85,000 words, and the final outline that I had to submit for approval was like 20,000 words.
Wow.
Nearly a quarter the length of the actual novel.
Do they like send you the Bible and say, you know, these are the things you can do and these are the things you can't do?
Yeah. So there's a bunch of rules, basically.
Sure.
And there's like a big show Bible, which is really handy for research for characters and stuff, because like everything is meticulously recorded and annotated. They've actually got a person whose job is to like compile this encyclopedia as they go along. So it's really cool to get that stuff. And again, as a fan, it's like, oh, I get to see all these scripts. And, you know. And yeah, they're really good. You know, obviously there's things I could do, things I couldn't do. But that's the same with any kind of tie-in fiction.
Go ahead, sorry.
Well, this is an important thing, I think, with tie-in fiction, is that the tie-in fiction used to be trash. You know, it was fast, it was quick.
Well, and some people still poo-poo it today.
Yeah, because it's like, okay, you get given characters, you get the world, that's not your creation. You know, the copyright in the book is not mine. It's CBS, because sure. I own elementary. But, like, writing the book was not any less effort than writing my own book. Mm-hmm. You know, every book that a writer writes is, like, blood, sweat, and tears, and late nights, and anxiety, and trauma, and stress, and all that great stuff that goes into a book. And that's exactly what happens with tie-in. You know, with elementary, it was exactly the same. So, yeah, it's a tie-in fiction. Yeah, we're talking earlier about the Star Wars books. You know, that's tie-in fiction. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, Chuck's doing one. Kevin Hearn did one. Proper writers doing tie-in fiction. It's great.
Well,
yeah, I'm a Doctor Who fan. I grew up reading Doctor Who books. That's the ultimate kind of tie-in.
Well, and it's funny because when you talk about the tie-in novels, there are times when I have gotten the opportunity to chat or interview, well, especially over on SF Signal, authors who have their own worlds and the other, and I am going total fanboy on them and asking them about their Star Trek novel that they wrote.
Right.
Because I remember their Star Trek novel and it was just amazing and I want to talk to them about that. And it amuses them, you know, but because they have all these worlds that they've created on their own, and I'm sitting here wanting to talk to them about their adventures with Kirk, Spock, and McCoy.
Yeah, because, you know, people love those characters, and especially, you know, people feel they own those characters.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Elementary gets about 10 million viewers a week, which is gigantic. It's a primetime network TV show, and people absolutely love it. And also, it means tie-in fiction comes with loads of expectations from the reader because they know what they want. And if you must deliver that, and if you don't deliver that, you've kind of failed. And I think, yeah, the best compliment that I can get for the elementary books is that they are like TV episodes, you know, to capture the character, to capture the tone, the themes, the format, which is great. And people, you know, you're saying people poo-poo tie-in fiction, but tie-in fiction's great, and people love it.
Have you also placed a call to your agent saying, hey, those Doctor Who books? I want to
know
those.
Yeah,
maybe.
There's loads of tie-in stuff to do. I mean, I've got other stuff on as well.
Do you look at something like Elementary? Do you look at it as a job that you can enjoy purely as that, or do you look at it as a way where, oh, there's 10 million viewers, so some of those people will buy that book and they'll see that I wrote it and maybe they'll check out some of my other fiction. So do you look at it as a way to kind of help build your audience, or do you just look at it as like, oh, here's a job to do?
It's kind of a bit of both because, you know, not only are there people who love Elementary who read the book who have never heard of me and have never read anything I've done. Likewise, I have people that have read my books, but have never seen Elementary or anything, you know, and I've had people ask me, it's like, you know, I haven't watched Elementary. Do I need to watch some episodes to understand the book? And my answer to that is, it would, you know, it'd help if you did, but again, it's a standalone detective mm-hmm. story, and if you can just get a grasp on that, and you know, it's Sherlock Holmes basically, so
yeah.
mm-hmm. not too much to learn.
Well,
so, and like, you know, Chuck and Kevin, you know, Kevin Hearn is a New York Times bestselling author. He's got his own readership for his books, and he's brought them to Star Wars. And then likewise, the Star Wars readership may then go and investigate his. Mm-hmm. So it's a kind of cross-pollination thing. I wouldn't do these, you know, I don't need to do the tie-in fiction. I've got plenty of my own stuff to do. So I only pick the stuff that I really, really want to do.
Would, you know, you're saying, you know, sort of you had a little bit of contact in terms of what you could and couldn't do. Is writing for television, like writing scripts for television, is that something that you'd be interested in doing at some point?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, because I love television, which kind of sounds a bit lame, but it's true. I do. I love television. I love there's so many shows that I watch.
Yeah, well, I think especially nowadays, and we've talked about it many times on the podcast, I think we're in a golden age for television. I think it's kind of one of the best media, you know, with Netflix and everything else, where you can watch on demand and watch at your own pace, and they sort of make series now that are meant to be sort of one 13-hour movie or what have you. It's some of the best mediums for storytelling now. So I imagine a novelist like you would love to get into doing something like that.
Can I throw out one more thing about the tie-in novels? I find it refreshing and good that your name is on the book and Chuck's name is on the book and Kevin's name. It's like there are certain properties where the author will put their name on the book. But we talked a little bit earlier about how many books we get, and John gets a lot of books and I get a lot of books. And the amount of books that I've gotten has tapered off a little bit, which is I think a good thing, because I don't want, you know, publishers sending me books that no one's going to review, kind of thing. But I got a ton of Eureka tie-in novels, and I thought, oh, these are going to be so much fun because Eureka is such a fun show. And they were all by the same author, and you know, they all had the little sheets in there that said, you know, if you're interested in interviewing this author, you know, email this person. And so I emailed the person. I said, hey, I just think it would be hilarious. I love Eureka. I would love to talk to this author about their Eureka books. And the publicist replied, which one? And I said, oh, well, I got these three books, you know, by Steve, blah, 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 blah. I forget the guy's name. And publicist came back again, right, but that's three different authors.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So I remember that with that book.
Yeah. So they created an author name to make it consistent for all the Eureka books, but each one was written by a different author under that pseudonym.
I think that's a kind of old-fashioned approach, and I know that it's still used, obviously. Mm-hmm. And it's probably used more in some genres. I mean, there's loads of, like, bizarrely, like, crime and mystery tie-in novels, which are not really tie-ins, but they're their own property. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's actually a group of authors who write under the same name. It's what Star Wars and Elementary and sort of other tie-in properties do. They really actually, they want the author's name on the front because they know that there's going to be that cross, mm-hmm. whatever of audience.
Cross-pollination, yeah.
Yeah. You know, Chuck Wendig has a huge following of new people, and he will introduce new people to Star Wars, mm-hmm. and they want that. That's absolutely important.
Yeah, I suspect that a lot of people will read Chuck's book that haven't read a Star Wars novel ever or in years, at least, because they love Chuck so much. So I imagine for them it's a smart move on their part. Look, they're going to sell a lot of Star Wars books either way, but why not try to increase that audience?
Yeah. And you don't think those people will hold grudges?
They always hold grudges. That's the way that works. All right. Well, anyway, we're running down on time here. So again, the new book that's coming out is The Machine Awakes, and that's out through Tor in North America. When is this released in Europe? Because you said Titan puts this out in Europe then?
Yeah, so Titan... it's the same date. I think it's like April the 24th. It's that week anyway, last week of April kind of thing.
Okay. So this will be available everywhere probably right after you hear this podcast. So go and check that out. He's got his elementary book. He's got the upcoming comic with Chuck Wendig. That's coming out in the summer, I believe, correct?
Yeah, June 17th or 15th or something.
And Adam, are you going to be at WorldCon this year?
No, I'm not at WorldCon. I'm going to be at San Diego Comic-Con.
Oh.
And some on panels for Torin, Archie, and I'm going to be at World Fantasy in November.
Okay.
Because I've got a big book coming out in November called Made to Kill, which is like...
Nice.
This is the book. The book.
The book.
Excellent, excellent. And you can follow Adam on Twitter at Ghostfinder. Yes, at Ghostfinder. And his website is adamchristopher.co.uk. So go and check out his website as well. Anything else you would like to tell our listeners about before we wrap it up, Adam?
No, I think that kind of covers everything.
Yeah, that's not enough. I got like 7 books coming out and a comic. What do you want from me? I know, it's such a...
There's plenty more coming as well. The stuff that I can't even talk about yet. So this year is crazy, but it's amazing, and I'm really grateful that I've got the opportunity to do what I love, which is, you know,
excellent.
You know what? You can totally talk about it on the podcast here. We won't tell anybody.
Okay. No one's listening. Right? Okay.
No. All right, Patrick, what do you have going on this week?
Usual stuff. So, you know, I'm HFMB everywhere. So Facebook, Twitter. I do the Wednesday Doodles with Jeff Patterson, and I strongly suggest other people go and do those as well because it's a lot of fun. I have my comic book / graphic novel reviews over at Kirkus. You know, I do a little known podcast over on SF Signal. Some people listen. It's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Usual stuff.
It's a thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. You can check out our website, functionalnerds.com. Over there on the sidebar, I have a book recommendations email that I send out. So if you'd like to get that, just put your email address in the little sign-up form on functionalnerds.com. You can follow me on Twitter at John Anilio. All right, everybody, have a great week.
So before you do that, John, now I'm just thinking, before you do that, so now I'm thinking that the BBC should contact Adam's agent about writing a Sherlock tie-in novel, and then he could say that he did both an Elementary tie-in and a Sherlock tie-in.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen.
Okay, John, do your thing.
All right, everybody, have a great week. We'll see you next time.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?